imagined audience has so far been those who think of themselves as physicalists and naturalists. If you happen to be a substance dualist, if you believe there is an undetectable ghost in your brain that pushes atoms around in ways that violate the laws of physics, then what I have to say doesn't really apply to you. Hopefully it's still been fun to learn about panpsychism, even though if you're a non-monist, you'll never be driven to panpsychism. On my other podcast, Counter Apologetics, you can hear why I don't think dualism is a viable option in episode 29, Science versus the Soul, and episode 58, Near-Death Experiences Part 2. I think humans are made of nothing but atoms. I'm a monist and a physicalist, though I have what some would consider a liberal interpretation of physicalism. If you're a physicalist, you're confronted with the existence of consciousness, which many perceive to be a challenge. Consciousness seems non-physical, or non-material, at least at face value. If everything is physical, how can experience come to exist? And to be clear, I don't think consciousness is non-physical. I think the reason many suppose it is results from the misconceived idea that we know exactly what the physical is. People who are physicalists tend to think that to be a physicalist means, in part, that everything is fundamentally non-experiential. It's not like anything to be matter. But consciousness exists, and we're matter and nothing else. So it would seem that there's something to be explained here. Maybe experience is non-physical, and in human beings there are two distinct substances, as Descartes would have us believe. Or maybe there really is nothing but the physical. That would imply that everything that might seem non-physical is a sort of illusion. Everything is physical, so non-physicality is an illusion. Or, maybe, the nature of the physical is slightly different than we typically imagine, and we can be full realists about non-physical things, which turn out to be physical after all. Perhaps we don't know as much about the physical as Descartes and Dan Dennett seem to think we do. As I mentioned in the Hard Problem episode, it would seem like a feat of radical emergence, of getting something from nothing, to go from non-experiential reality to experiential reality. And of course you could argue that I'm making a compositional fallacy here. You can get A from not A in plenty of circumstances. You can get fluidity from clusters of individual particles, for example. Again, listen to the end of that Hard Problem episode. Experience emerging from non-experience seems different for a few reasons. Here's a more interesting question. How did we end up with the hard problem in the first place? Why have we assumed that the physical, in its fundamental nature, is wholly non-experiential? What's the evidence for that idea? Bertrand Russell pointed out that the only thing we know about the intrinsic nature of matter is that it's at least sometimes conscious. That's our epistemological starting point. If you accept that consciousness is the one thing we know, with absolute certainty, and accept you are made of matter, nothing more, it follows that the one thing we know about matter, with certainty, is that it's sometimes conscious. So where do we get the idea that it's strange to suppose matter is conscious? Why do we think matter is non-experiential to begin with? Again, what's the evidence for that belief? To quote the philosopher Galen Strawson, if you make that assumption, you have to somehow magic the experiential out of the non-experiential, which you simply don't have to do if you suppose experience is right there at the start. We don't know anything about the nature of the physical that gives us any reason to think its intrinsic nature isn't partly experiential. End quote. And where do materialists get the idea that we know what the physical is to begin with, at least well enough to conclude with certainty that it couldn't be consciousness involving? Physics certainly tells us lots of interesting things about the structure and behavior of matter, but it's entirely silent on what matter is intrinsically, and what, or if it's like anything, for matter. If you're a materialist monist, you either have to accept strong emergence, which most think is impossible, or you have to deny that experience really exists, which many materialists take as the more reasonable option available to them. If not one of those two options, then you'll end up sounding a lot like a panpsychist or a neutral monist. Another way out would be to suppose that we have an immaterial, non-physical soul. That would make you a dualist, and there are famous problems with dualism. They remain unsolved, and I don't think they're ever going to be solved. So with that by way of background, let's tackle some of the common objections to panpsychism. the incredulous stare. The most common objection to panpsychism is what I like to call the incredulous stare. The idea that electrons have a little bit of consciousness is not going to sound any less crazy until you know the reason why panpsychists think fundamental particles must be experience-involving. The incredulous stare is essentially an appeal to common sense. Isn't panpsychism counterintuitive? Yeah, of course it's counterintuitive. But our initial intuitive reaction isn't necessarily a good guide to the intrinsic nature of matter. We ordinarily judge matter that's not arranged like a human to be non-conscious based on intuition alone. But why should we think common sense is an infallible guide to what the universe is like? The more important question is, what's the source of this intuition? Why is panpsychism counterintuitive? I'm definitely not arguing that we throw out our intuitions or that we never trust them. I think it's important to understand why our intuitions are the way they are, why something might seem counterintuitive to us, in order to judge whether or not we should care that panpsychism or any other idea sounds so strange and counterintuitive. Materialists judge things not to be conscious based on their intuition that they will be able to detect consciousness in a material object with complete accuracy simply by looking at it. I think this is ridiculous, since our abilities for judging whether or not something is conscious were crafted by evolution. As social animals, we learned to read the faces and body language of others. We gather the mental state of others by looking at their faces and bodies. They might contract some muscles in their face, scrunching it up in a particular way. The light bounces off their skin, traveling through space to my rods and cones, which sends electrical impulses to my brain and particular patterns of neurons fire. When I hear your tone of voice, you're creating vibrations that travel through a medium, bounce into my ears, vibrate some little hairs, which send electrical signals to my brain, which it then interprets. It's a closed physical process. My evolved psychological module, my theory of mind, projects consciousness onto you. All I see are these external physical indicators. They reach me by physical means, and then I'm doing the work of projecting consciousness onto you. I don't have access to your experience directly. We all only have access to our own private experience. Our theory of mind evolved to navigate social situations with other humans, to avoid danger. There's no reason to think that it's infallible. There are common situations where our consciousness-detecting software can be fooled. A sufficiently camouflaged person could be overlooked. We can walk right by a conscious creature without detecting any consciousness. Conversely, we can mistakenly attribute a mind where there isn't one. If we hear a bump in the night, we and other animals involuntarily think there's a conscious agent present, usually some kind of intruder, when really it's some innocuous creaking. The same was true for our ancestors, hearing rustles in the grass. We project consciousness onto others using our theory of mind. Objecting to panpsychism by appealing to our common sense or intuitions is really an appeal to our theory of mind. Appealing to our theory of mind does not amount to a serious objection to panpsychism. Another one of the most common objections: panpsychism is utterly non-falsifiable. We can never take it seriously because there is no test we could run that could prove it wrong. And this is completely true. There is no test that could falsify the idea that an electron is conscious. However, there is no test that could falsify the idea that an electron is wholly non-conscious either. For the same reason, I can never know you're conscious, and we'll never know if Hal from Space Odyssey was conscious. We can never know if an electron is conscious. Can you falsify materialism? The idea that fundamental matter is non-conscious, and the idea that it is consciousness-involving, are equally unfalsifiable. Nevertheless, it must be one or the other. It's either like something, or it's not. So we have to examine other arguments. They're both unfalsifiable, but I'm not arguing that there's a perfect symmetry between the panpsychist and the non-conscious materialist positions. I think the evidence leans in favor of panpsychism. But if we're going by the falsifiability criterion alone, they are symmetrical. So it can't be used as a point against panpsychism. As I mentioned earlier, the one thing we know for sure about matter is that it's capable of instantiating phenomenal consciousness. That's our epistemological starting point. So until we've been given some reason to think otherwise, the burden lies on the non-conscious materialist to argue for the existence of non-conscious matter. The materialist position also creates the hard problem right out of thin air. Why create this problem for ourselves if the one thing we know about the stuff of which we're made is that it's sometimes conscious? Why do we suppose there is such a thing as non-conscious matter? How do we justify it and account for the problems it creates? Dan Dennett and friends understand this point. They just take it in the opposite direction. They see that the hard problem is not solvable, so they say nothing is conscious. Panpsychists go the other way. Doesn't panpsychism violate physics somehow? Isn't modern physics on the side of materialism? First, we can't conflate physicalism and physics. Physicalism is the position that everything is physical, and people usually imagine that to entail that fundamental stuff is entirely non-conscious. However, that's only one version of physicalism. Many physicalists and materialists mistakenly believe that physics gives us some reason to be that type of physicalist. But physics doesn't give us a single reason to suppose that electrons don't have any internal nature. If you think it does, you may have conflated consciousness with certain contents of human consciousness, like the experience of having free will and being able to do whatever you please, or the ability to feel complex emotions, or a desire to communicate. Panpsychists are simply arguing that it's like something to be matter, not that all matter enjoys all the particular contents of consciousness we do. We have large, complicated brains. You need a brain and nervous system to have the kinds of experiences we have. The major reason panpsychism doesn't conflict with physics is because panpsychism doesn't have much to say about how matter will behave. It relates only to the internal, subjective nature of matter that can't be observed from a third-person point of view. Bertrand Russell, Arthur Eddington, and many others have defended the idea that physical science doesn't tell us what matter is, only what it does. The job of physics is to provide us with mathematical models that allow us to predict, with great accuracy, how matter will behave. This is incredibly useful information. It allows us to understand and manipulate the world in extraordinary ways. And obviously, physics tells us a lot of true things about matter. But it's one thing to predict the behavior of an electron, and quite another to know its intrinsic nature. Just like it's one thing to view your behavior, and another to directly experience your point of view. I can observe and predict your external behavior, but I cannot know what, or even if, you're experiencing. Physics simply doesn't have anything to say about whether it's like something to be matter on levels beneath us. It never did. This is what Galen Strawson calls the silence of physics. He says that panpsychists can be confident that many of the claims of physics are straightforwardly true, or a very good approximation of the truth. The periodic table is getting at something deeply true and valuable and exciting about reality. So is the inverse square law of gravitational attraction, F equals ma, E equals mc squared, and so on. Quote, physics may tell us a lot about the structure of physical reality, but it doesn't and can't tell us anything about the intrinsic nature of reality, insofar as its intrinsic nature is more than its structure. On this matter, physics is perfectly silent. End quote. Physics tells us how matter will behave under certain conditions, what it will do, not what or if it's like anything to be matter. The claims of physics are expressed in abstract models, in mathematical equations that describe structure and behavior. As Russell put it, physics is mathematical not because we know so much about the physical world, but because we know so little. Stephen Hawking also understood this point about structure and behavior versus intrinsic nature. Physics is, quote, just a set of rules and equations. It leaves open the question of what breathes fire into the equations and makes a universe for them to describe. End quote. To quote Strawson once more, we know the experiential exists. Do we know the non-experiential exists? Do we know there is any non-conscious stuff in the world? Actually, no. As a good naturalist, I take it that experiences are neural, electrochemical goings-on. Many think it's obvious that physicalism is incompatible with panpsychism. This is a mistake. Serious discussion of the so-called mind-body problem begins only on the far side of this mistake, Getting the point about the silence of physics and our ignorance of the physical is a revolutionary experience in a standard Western philosophical career. It involves a massive intellectual jolt. End quote. Many philosophers and scientists believe that a truly rigorous physicalism, or naturalism, rules out realism about conscious experience. They deny the realism premise from last episode. Strawson pointed out that these eliminativist materialists, though they fancy themselves to be opponents of Descartes, actually agree with him in a way that panpsychists do not. They claim that consciousness can't be wholly physical, mainly because we pretty much know the nature of the physical. They share the mistaken assumption that we understand the nature of matter enough to know its intrinsic nature can't involve consciousness. This is from Joseph Priestley, the discoverer of oxygen. Quote, "I define matter to be a substance possessed of the property of extension and of powers of attraction or repulsion. And since it has never yet been asserted that the powers of sensation and thought are incompatible with these, I therefore maintain that we have no reason to suppose that there are in man two substances so distinct from each other as have been represented." End quote. As Bertrand Russell pointed out, quote, "We know nothing about the intrinsic quality of physical events except when these are mental events that we directly experience." And earlier in his life, quote, "We now realize that we know nothing of the intrinsic quality of physical phenomena except when they happen to be sensations, and that therefore there is no reason to be surprised that some are sensations." End quote. Consciousness is synonymous with physical goings-on, at least some of the time. So if you think there's a problem with physical stuff being conscious, you have gone wrong somewhere. And this is related to the previous objection. Wouldn't we have to drastically modify our current standard model of physics to accommodate panpsychism? The short answer is no. We would not have to alter the standard model of particle physics one bit to accommodate panpsychism. In his review of Mind and Cosmos, the physicist Sean Carroll said, quote, "Imagine what it would entail to truly believe that consciousness is not accounted for by physics. It would entail, among other things, that the behavior of ordinary matter would occasionally deviate from that expected on the basis of physics alone, even in circumstances where consciousness was not involved in any obvious way." End quote. I've heard Sean Carroll level this objection quite a few times. He likes to remind us that we've discovered every particle that is relevant to our daily lives. And once properly understood, it's easy to see that he's right. And I've linked a blog post of his that explains this in more detail if you're interested. We don't know everything about physics. There are surely undiscovered particles, but they don't interact strongly enough with the atoms of which we're made, or we would have found them by now.
The brain is made of atoms. Here's the controversial one. Even my friends get annoyed when I say this, but it's the truth, so I will lay it on you. We know how atoms work. They're not a mystery to us. And they work in such a way that when you die, there is no way for the information that was you to persist after death. There's no way for that stuff, that knowledge, that set of beliefs and feelings that made you, you, to leave your body. The laws of physics, we don't know all laws of physics by any stretch of the imagination, but those laws of physics that are relevant to the atoms in your body, we know all of the laws of physics that far. There's no room for new laws of physics that would affect how the atoms in your brain actually work. So I would give you the whole explanation for the laws of physics, how they came to be, why we're confident, but instead, I will just intimidate you in submission by showing you an equation. So in this one equation are summarized all of the laws of physics necessary to understand the atoms in your brain at the energy, mass, and length scales relevant to your everyday lives. There's plenty of room in the laws of physics for other stuff. We don't know how black holes work. There's plenty of things we don't understand. I'm not saying that physics is done, but we know enough to say that if there are any other forces, particles, fields, phenomena, they can't affect the atoms in your brain, because either They're so weak that they would have no effect on what the atoms are doing, or we would have found them in experiments. Those are the only two options. No one ever understands me when I say this, so I'm going to say the same thing over again. Here are the caveats to this statement. I'm not saying we understand all of physics. I'm not saying that there's room for no new discoveries in the non-everyday world, but we have an underlying framework, which we call quantum field theory, as Dan mentioned. And quantum field theory is either true or false. All the evidence says that it's true, and if it is true, then there is no room for new physics that can in any way affect what goes on in the atoms in your brain. We understand what they do. There is therefore no room for the information.
This is an argument against substance dualism, not panpsychism. I do not want to add a new particle or change anything objective. I want to add a subjective component to matter, not something externally, behaviorally viewable by a third party. Rather, I want to add something internally and subjectively viewable. Phenomenal properties are not like charge or mass. This is related to the silence of physics. Physics is a third-person enterprise. It tells us about structure and behavior and externally observable properties. It does not and cannot tell us about internal, subjective properties. Carroll's objection is not an objection to panpsychism, as he and others seem to think it is. This is based on a misunderstanding of what panpsychists are proposing. We do not think there are more constituents to matter that are yet undiscovered. We think the matter we know about has additional properties that have not yet been fully appreciated. Properties of a different kind than the ones physical science is able to work with. We're not proposing a new particle, some new substance that interacts with atoms. We're not talking about anything that can be objectively observed by a third party. We're talking about the one thing that can't be measured in that way. And we happen to know for certain that it exists, and that it has this property of only being observable by the subject of experience. And the only reason I think that what I'm saying isn't complete pseudoscience is because I know that subjective properties exist. It's the only thing I know with certainty. We're not talking about anything that can be objectively observed by a third party. We're talking about the one thing, or at least one of the only things, that can't be measured in that way. We're talking about the very thing Galileo put in brackets to spark modern science, the qualitative and subjective. The subjective is also what the early behaviorists put in brackets. They became methodological eliminativists, emphasis on methodological. The silence of physics is caused by the fact that science is an objective enterprise. It views matter from the outside and tells us how it will behave under certain conditions. It does not tell us what it is like to be matter. Physics tells us about structure, and panpsychists don't want to add structure. That's what dualists want to do. If this seems implausible, consider the minds of other people. You only have access to your own subjectivity, and there is no scientific test that could confirm that you're conscious to others. Do you have a consciousness meter? Will science ever produce a consciousness meter that leaves no room for doubt? It won't, because it can't. It would only be able to study the external, objective correlates of consciousness. But you can't observe consciousness. It's subjective, not objectively or externally or behaviorally observable. Even if you think science could build such a device, how would we know it works? Our hypothetical consciousness detector can only study the neural correlates of consciousness. It can't confirm that there is, in fact, a subjective, qualitative experience present. Once you understand why a device that detects electric charge isn't anything like a consciousness detector, you'll understand why Carroll's objection is deflated. His argument that we can't introduce a new particle underlying everyday life is as potent of an objection to substance dualism as ever, but we're not substance dualists. Since we've been discussing some objections to panpsychism, I thought we should mention a couple of the advantages of panpsychism. We've talked about how it solves the hard problem, but we haven't mentioned, for example, that panpsychism is the only explanation of consciousness I'm aware of that is thoroughly Copernican. On panpsychism, humans aren't special. We're not the only thing in the universe that is or can be conscious. Our human form of consciousness is rare, sure, but so is our human arrangement of atoms. Panpsychism is the most humble view, the one that says we're not special, or at least less special than we commonly imagine. It's possible that someday panpsychism will be understood as the next step in this process of discovering that human beings are not the center of the universe. Earth isn't the center of the solar system, humans aren't separate from the rest of the animal kingdom, and maybe someday, our universe isn't the only universe, and humans aren't the only collections of matter that instantiate phenomenal consciousness. Panpsychism can also answer why consciousness evolved, a big issue for materialists. What's the function of consciousness? Does it have one? Why would it be selected for, or a byproduct of adaptations? If panpsychism is accurate, there is no mystery as to why our brains instantiate phenomenal properties, whereas on materialism, it's unclear why consciousness ever would have evolved. The next point is one we've hit on before, but I like the way Strawson puts it here. Quote, "I know many will still think that it's somehow ontologically or theoretically cheaper to postulate non-experiential stuff rather than experiential stuff as the basic stuff of reality. But this is a mistake. It's not cheaper. It's more expensive, both because we know there is experiential reality and don't know there is any non-experiential reality, and because we now have to posit some sort of radical emergence as a way of getting experiential reality to develop out of the non-experiential." Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.